Chapter 6. In contrast to the confinement of his honour guard, Korax was quartered in some comfort and opulence, given a villa-like suite of chambers that overlooked a vast underground lake. Lit from below the water's surface by powerful lights, the stalactite-clustered ceiling glittered with crystal deposits that glinted in the dappling glow from the waters beneath. The rooms were lavishly furnished with dark wood and gilded furniture, hanging tapestries and deep carpets. From the ceilings hung chandeliers with real candles, something of a novelty to the Primarch who had been raised under the dim glow of lumen strips. The fact that the chambers were scaled to the height and bulk of a Primarch was something of a pleasant surprise. It occurred to Korax that Primarch-appointed quarters should not have been a shock, given that he was on Terra. He wondered briefly if they had been intended as guest quarters, or something more permanent once the Great Crusade had been finished. His brothers had sometimes quarrelled about what would happen when the last planet was conquered and the Emperor's dream made a reality, but Korax had been more than content to allow others to take over the burden of administrating the Imperium in the wake of the Legionis Astartes. He was a commander, not a governor, and if he had no more battles to fight, he could have happily spent his remaining years, however many hundreds or perhaps thousands that might be, in comfortable retirement, perhaps compiling a treatise on the political lessons he had learned from his mentors on Lycaeus. It was quite literally a world away from his quarters on Deliverance, which were by necessity rather cramped and functional. Not that luxury had ever been a consideration of the Primarch. His home had always been a battlefield, a ship's deck, or the rooms of a command centre. Once Malkador had taken his leave, Korax had been left alone with a handful of custodians on hand to act as guides and guards, and the small company of servants who had seemed to spring into existence as Korax had moved from room to room, each more than happy to see to the wants and needs of their Primarch guest. For the first time since he had awoken in the dark cellar of Lycaeus, Korax felt as if he was in a place intended for him. The humans that attended him were dwarfed by their surroundings, diminutive figures let free to roam in the house of a giant, but seemed accustomed to the strangeness of the household in which they served. For a short time, the Primarch tried to relax, though his ribs were sore and the lacerations on his back plagued him with spasms of pain. Even on the long voyage to Terra, he had not allowed himself time to rest, to allow his body to recover. The constant activity in Korax's unsettled mood had prevented any meaningful recuperation. In a way, the injuries Korax felt were a reminder to him of what had happened, making real an event that sometimes seemed to have been a nightmare. Every twinge of torn muscle and stab of ripped flesh was a physical companion to the torments of his thoughts, a memorial of the tens of thousands that would never return to Deliverance. The novelty of the environment wore off as lights were dimmed in an approximation of night. Agitated by what he had heard from Dorne and Malkador, Korax was full of energy and had no desire to sleep. At his request, a writing tablet was brought to the Primarch, and he started to make notes of everything he had seen since he and the other legions had arrived to bring Horus to justice for his actions at Istvan III. At first, his words were functional, listing the dispositions of the different legions, their agreed strategy, and the intelligence reports concerning the Sons of Horus. He remembered in exact detail the initial fleet manoeuvres performed to encircle the ships of the Warmaster, even as drop pods, hawk wings, thunderhawks, and stormbirds were readied for the assault on the planet below. At the time, nothing had seemed amiss. But on reflection, Korax could see the plots of his treacherous brethren already being set in motion. The integration of the legions had seemed a wise move given the circumstances, a united front against the perfidy of Horus and his legionaries. In retrospect, it had allowed the traitors close, their battle barges and cruisers alongside those of the Salamanders, Iron Hands, and Raven Guard. Ferus Manus had led the attack against the reasoning of Korax and the strategy devised by Dorne, determined that the traitors would be brought down. Perhaps he had been goaded into it by some quiet word from Fulgrim or Lorga. They would never know, as the Gorgon had been slain on Istvan V. That the second wave was composed entirely of those who had sworn allegiance to Horus was the greatest machination, an attack against which the loyalists could muster no defence. As he wrote, Korax's account gradually grew more personal. It was impossible to separate himself from the bald facts of what had happened. His fingers flew over the screen of the writing pad, charting his feelings of horror and disgust as the Iron Warriors and the Word-Bearers had opened fire from the hills overlooking the Urgal Depression. He could not help but recall his own burning rage, as his claws had scythed through the traitors, every sweep of his weapons accompanied by a surge of anger. He stopped, as his memories brought him to Lorgar. How could he find the words to describe the loathing he had felt for his brother? And if he found the words for that, how would he then explain his feelings when the Night Haunter, Conrad Kurz, had stopped Korax's lightning claw milliseconds from Lorgar's throat? The servants were bustling again, and hearing their scattered conversation, the Primarch realized that the night had already passed, and they were preparing a breakfast for him. He scanned the last few paragraphs he had written, amazed by the vitriol let free from his thoughts. He considered deleting the whole document, expunging his memories at a stroke, but resisted. As painful as it was, he had to carry on. He described his encounter with Lorgar and Kurz in a few brief lines, reverting to the perfunctory style with which he had started, swiftly moving on to his withdrawal to a nearby Thunderhawk, a withdrawal that had been cut short by enemy fire, bringing the craft down only a few kilometres from the massacre. The account came easily again, the turmoil in his thoughts subsiding as he recounted the gathering of the Raven Guard and the retreat into the mountains, striking back at the traitors when they could, fading into the shadows of the caves and valleys when the enemy came with too much strength. He finished with a terse telling of Bran's arrival, as it had been relayed to him by the commander, and the extraction from Istvan. Korax was sure he had not heard the whole of the story, for Bran to have disobeyed his orders and left Deliverance had been a bold move. Also, the Therion, prefect of Alarius, was involved somehow. That part of the story did not yet make sense, and Korax resolved to find out the truth behind it when he returned to the Avenger. He took the tablet with him as he moved to the feasting chamber, compiling and annotating tables of warships and other forces he had documented during the entire campaign. As he wolfed down the food, barely registering its taste or texture, Korax added an appendix detailing the enemy forces and tactics he had seen on Istvan, and a few more notes regarding the fleet movements observed as they had fled the star system. His account complete, he sealed the file and passed it to one of the attendants, commanding that it be taken to Malkador. The sigilite would ensure that the information was passed on to Dorne and any others that would find it of benefit. Writing down his experiences on Istvan had not brought any sense of satisfaction or release. There were still so many unanswered questions, Korax could not begin to articulate them. Again and again, he was left with a sense of loss and emptiness, not knowing what had turned his brothers against the Emperor. Seeking peace and distraction, the Primarch left the chambers and walked out onto the balcony overlooking the inner sea. He put aside all of the thoughts crowding into his head and tried to focus only on the ever-shifting play of light and the constant gurgle and ripple of water. After spending some time marvelling at the beauty of the lake cavern and taking a few minutes to explore his immediate surroundings, the Primarch chose to row further afield. There were several other self-contained habitats in the vicinity, facing onto a circular plaza decorated with an abstract mosaic. All of the other residences looked empty at the moment. Korax counted 20 of them, a number that was surely not coincidence. That answered the question of how long ago they had been built, for surely a more recent construction would have numbered only 18. From outside, there was no way of telling one apartment suite from the other, and Korax quickly grew bored of trying to guess who might have been housed behind which doors. He was about to summon the elevator situated in a grand column at the central plaza when one of the resident servants came hurrying out.
"Lord Korax, there is a message for you."
The Primarch turned back to see a woman of middle years running across the plaza.
"Lord Dorne has returned and wishes to meet with you in Malkador."
At that moment, a chime sounded from the elevator, and a panel in the marble-like pillar slid open to reveal a captain in the livery of the Imperial Fists.
"That would be your guide, Lord Korax," said the servant. "Sorry for the delay in finding you."
"No matter," said Korax. The Imperial Fist slapped a hand to his chest in salute and bowed his head as Korax stepped into the elevator. The door closed, enveloping the Primarch and Legionary in a soft blue glow of artificial light.
"Where am I going to meet my brother?" asked Korax.
"Malkador will host you in the Hall of Victories, Lord," replied the captain. "It will only take a few minutes to get there." They said nothing further to each other as the elevator continued to descend, dropping several kilometers into the heart of Terra. Eventually the conveyance slowed, and Korax estimated that they were some distance below sea level. A short distance from the shaft, the Imperial Fist brought him in front of a massive set of double doors, each gilded and engraved, showing a picture of a man and a woman facing each other. On the left door, the woman held a babe in the crook of one arm and a sword in her hand, her hair flowing like a waterfall, mingling with a billowing dress that in turn merged with the long grass at her feet. On the right, the man, dressed in a worker's overalls, a chain with a crossed lightning bolt of unification hanging around his neck, had a wrench in one hand and a pistol in the other, looking to the skies. Between them burned a stylized star, surrounded by other pinpricks in the sky. Ornate scrollwork held a caption across the heavens in one of the Terran languages of old. Korax had not been much of a scholar and had studied little of pre-imperial Terran culture, unlike many of his brothers. He had felt little interest in the past, preferring to concentrate his thoughts and actions on the proper shaping of the future. Despite that, he could instinctively decipher the emblazoned message, crudely translating it as, "People of Earth, together." The doors opened easily at Korax's push, swinging silently inwards to reveal a hall several hundred meters long. Korax was surprised to see arched windows along the wall to his right, with sunlight streaming through them. Given the name of the place, Korax had expected to see lines of battle honors and banners, displays of armor and weapons lining the walls. Instead, there were many glass cabinets, varying from those small enough to fit in Korax's palm to some the size of battle tanks, arranged in rows across the hall, each containing an object from across the galaxy and dating back centuries, millennia, tens of millennia. Stepping up to the nearest cabinet, Korax stooped to examine the contents. He felt a tingle of static and heard the faint buzz of a stasis field generator. Enclosed within was a small circuit board, its function unknown. On the stand below, a small steel plate, etched with plain text, revealed its importance. "Navigational circuit from the first warp-capable starship." Korax stepped back in surprise. Intrigued, he turned around and found himself looking at the skeletal form of a wheeled vehicle, barely large enough for a normal man to sit inside. Its balloon tires made up the greater part of its bulk. Korax stepped up to examine the title plate. Titan Rover. The Primarch was not sure what to make of it. It certainly looked like no Titan ever produced by the Mechanicum, which were towering war machines tens of meters high. He looked more closely at the vehicle, but could not see anything that might be a weapon mount. With a grunt of confusion, he moved on, eyes passing over various technological artifacts and coming to rest on a glass tube filled with a pulsating liquid coloured a deep blue, located about a dozen metres further down the hall. The words beneath, though written in Imperial Gothic, might well have been an alien or lost language, for all the sense Korax could make of them. Mendelian Eukaryotic Genesis Formula. Raking his fingers through his hair, which had slipped across his face, Korax straightened, bringing something else into his eyeline. It was a small cabinet, less than half a meter to each face, but its positioning on the central aisle seemed to mark it out as of particular importance. Within was a broken piece of pottery. It was utterly unremarkable, shattered into 8 curved shards of crude, unpainted clay, marked with fingerprints and dents. Piecing the parts together in his mind, Korax worked out that it was a bowl of some kind. He heard the whisper of the doors opening and turned back to see Malkador entering the hall, striding with purpose. His face was flushed with blood, his eyes bright and alert.
"What is this place?" Korax asked. "What manner of victories are celebrated?"
"The most important kind," said the Sigilite, joining Korax beside the shattered bowl. He pointed with a skeletal finger at the contents of the cabinet. "One of the first pieces of pottery ever made by human hand, hundreds of thousands of years old."
"It doesn't seem like much of an achievement compared to some of the things in here," said Korax. "It's so simple, a child could make it."
"And yet perhaps one of the most important advances in our entire history, Korax," said Malkador. "Without this bowl,
Without the mind that devised it and the hands that shaped it, the rest of the hall would be empty. We have come a long, long way since one of our ancestors noticed a certain type of mud hardening in the sun and decided to make something. But without a first step, no journey is ever begun. All of these are technological achievements, first steps into new epochs of human history. Most are technological or scientific. A few are cultural, said Malkador. He waved his hand towards the far end of the hall, where a number of paintings, statues, carvings, tapestries, and other works of art were stored. Before the Primarch could investigate, the doors opened again, revealing a figure almost as tall as Korax and broader at the shoulders. Rogal Dorn's white blonde hair was cropped short and spiked, framing his weathered features like a corona. He was dressed in demi-armor, chest, shins, and forearms protected by plates and sheaths of golden metal etched with swirling designs similar to those on Korax's own suit. A cloak of deep red reached down to Dorn's ankles, held with a clasp shaped into a clenched fist on his left shoulder, pinned with a brooch in the form of the Imperial Aquila on the right. He wore a skirt of golden mail that hung to his knees, and at the Primarch's waist was a belt that held a chain sword with fang-like teeth and a holstered bolter. Dorn's hands were covered by segmented gauntlets of gold, each knuckle embedded with a sizable ruby. His skin was leathery and heavily tanned, covered by traceries of thin scars and brand marks.
Brother!
Dorn called out with a hand raised in greeting, his voice booming down the hall, disturbing the air of quiet reverence. The two Primarchs met and clasped, wrist to wrist, in welcome. Dorn slapped a hand to Korax's shoulder and smiled briefly.
I promised I would be here today, said Dorn. As ever, your word is as secure as the fortresses you raise, replied Korax, stepping back and releasing his grip on his Jean brother.
Dorn's expression darkened.
I hope that my latest work proves equal to the task.
Your work is as exceptional as ever, Rogal, said Malkador.
He waved for them to accompany him to the line of benches beneath the high windows.
There is not another in the galaxy the Emperor would want to raise up his walls for him.
Korax stopped before sitting and looked out of the windows. Beyond was a wide valley which appeared to be made entirely of metal. Glancing up, he saw the dull sky several hundred meters above. The entire edifice was delved into a deep fissure and continued to stretch below out of sight, story after story of windows and walkways, the divide crisscrossed by covered bridges, curving railway tracks, and black roads.
The clerical tenements, explained Malkador, peering past Korax. 3 million men and women devoted to the administration of Terra and the Sol system.
3 million? For one system?
Korax could not believe what he heard.
Why so many?
Oh, that's just a fraction of the civil population, Corvus, said the Sigillite. It's barely enough to keep track of all the comings and goings here. Most of the others live in the service towers over at the Chivalan Heights, about 700 million of them.
It is barrack space that concerns me more, said Dorn, lowering himself to the dark blue couch. Your army of scribes and auditors are not going to keep Horus at bay.
Give them guns, and I am sure they will do their best,
countered the Sigillite, sitting on the next bench.
I've already sent your honor guard to the new garrison quarters not far from here, Dorn told Korax,
as the Raven Guard Primarch continued to look out of the window.
There is room for several thousand more once the rest of your legion arrives.
Korax turned, eyebrows raised in surprise.
You think I'm bringing the Raven Guard here? Where else would they go? By the sounds of it, there are barely enough of you to make Deliverance look inhabited. We need every warrior we can to defend Terra. Captain Norris tells me that you had 1,714 legionaries and other ranks on board Avenger. How many more can I factor into my plans to arrive from Deliverance?
You are getting ahead of yourself, brother, Korax said, crossing his arms.
I came here to see the Emperor and will seek his permission to launch attacks against the traitors.
"Unwise," muttered Malkador, obviously to himself, yet not quiet enough to avoid Korax's keen hearing. The Primarch rounded on Malkador.
"I am not staying here to get trapped like a rat in a hole," snapped Korax.
He calmed down and looked at Dorn again.
"You know how we fight, brother. We were never expert at manning a tower or trench line. If the Raven Guard are to play their part, we need freedom to operate without our backs to a wall." "Impossible," said Dorn. "Like it or not, I must insist that your legion be stationed here to bolster the defense of the Emperor. Horus will be coming here, make no mistake about that. Our first duty, our only duty, is the protection of Terra. What damage do you think you can do on your own? You have, what, 3,000 warriors? Horus now has many hundred times that number, and who can say how his ranks might swell? Your place is here, on Terra, like it or not." "I like it not, and I do not care what you insist," said Korax,
infuriated by Dorn's assumption that the Primarch of the Raven Guard would demurely acquiesce to his demand.
"I swore my oath to the Emperor, not to you, and nor to you, Malkador, before you start claiming any authority as regent."
Dorn and the Sigilite said nothing as Korax stepped away from the windows, one hand rubbing at his brow in agitation. The Raven Guard Primarch stopped his pacing and turned back to the others, hand held out in conciliation.
"Why do you assume that Horus must attack Terra?"
Korax asked.
"If he wishes to depose the Emperor and claim the galaxy for himself, there is no other way," said Malkador. "We will not allow that to happen," added Dorn.
"You misunderstand me," said Korax. "You assume that Horus will reach Terra. You have already surrendered the initiative to our enemy, and now run around making the best you can of the time he will allow you.
We need to strike back fast, dull any momentum he has gained from the massacre at Istvan, and stop this rebellion in its infancy."
"That was why you were sent to Istvan," said Malkador, sighing heavily. "It is you who does not understand the situation fully. Horus has the allegiance of his own legion. The Word Bearers, the Alpha Legion, the Iron Warrior—"
"I know the faces of the traitors. I saw them firsthand at Istvan," snarled Korax. "We are not without allies. The Khan and his white scars, the Lion with the First. What of the Ultramarines and the Thousand Suns?"
There followed an uncomfortable silence, while Dorn and Malkador exchanged a worried glance. The Primarch gave Malkador a slight nod.
"The Thousand Suns cannot be numbered amongst those loyal to Terra," said the Sigilite. "I won't go into details, but Magnus proved his untrustworthiness and has been dealt with. Leman Russ and his legion were dispatched to bring Magnus to account for breaking the Nykaea Decree."
"What does that mean?" said Korax.
"What happened is uncertain so far," said Dorn, his tone blunt. "The wolves of Fenris were overzealous. They have destroyed Prospero and wiped out the Thousand Suns."
"What would you expect, unleashing the Wolf King like that?" said Korax.
"If that were true, our woes would be lessened," said Malkador, his gaze moving between Korax and Dorn. "Only this morning I have reports from Prospero that Magnus and some of his legion escaped the attack. I fear the numbers of our enemies will be swelled by Russ's headstrong actions rather than reduced. Though there is no great kinship between Magnus and Horus, it seems we have given them a common foe."
Dorn let out a growl of irritation, his fist thumping down onto the fabric of the bench. The Primarch stood up and stared at Korax.
"Every warrior will count," said Dorn. "We need you on Terra. We cannot stop Horus coming here. Accept that as a fact, and bring your legion to the defense."
"Not unless the Emperor himself commands it," said Korax,
once more pacing back and forth in front of the other two, driven by agitation.
"I will not sit idle while Horus and our other traitorous brothers buy their time and ready themselves for the battle. They must be harangued and harried, made to pay swiftly for what they've done. They will be brimming with supreme confidence at the moment. I will puncture their pride and show them that they have not won yet.
Korak stopped and fixed his glare upon Dorn.
I trust no one more than you, brother, to see the Emperor safe, but I do not have your confidence or patience. I must fight back and hurt the traitors for what they have done to my legion.
A personal vendetta, said Malkador.
An act of defiance, replied Korax. There are those that Horus will try to recruit. He can virtually guarantee them victory at the moment, with no evidence to counter his claims. I will send a message across the Imperium that the Emperor and his legions have not abandoned them.
The Raven Guard Primarch spun away and strode towards the doors.
Where are you going? Dorn called out, standing up. To see the Emperor,
Korax snarled in reply.
He won't see you, Korax. Do not disturb him,
Malkador cried out, hurrying after the departing Primarch. Korax hauled open the doors and found himself confronted by a contingent of Malkador's custodian bodyguard.
You, he snapped, pointing to their leader. Take me to the Emperor.
The custodian said nothing, but turned his head to look at Malkador as he came up beside Korax.
This is unwise, Korax, the sigillite said.
Be sensible, brother,
said Dorn, laying a hand on Korax's arm. The Raven Guard pulled away from his brother's grip.
I am Primarch of the Raven Guard, son of the Emperor, said Korax. It is my right. Take me to the Emperor now, or I will find him myself.
Dorn met his glare with a doubtful expression, his hand straying to the hilt of the chainsword at his hip in warning.
Enough. I will brook no dispute in my palace.
Korax and Dorn looked at Malkador, who had spoken, though his voice was deep and resonant, unlike the whisper of the sigillite. Malkador's eyes shone with golden light, his face a mask of beatific happiness. His lips moved again, as though divorced from the rest of his body, and he held out a gnarled hand surrounded by a shimmering aura.
My Emperor?
Dorn lowered to one knee and bowed his head.
I am sorry for causing conflict.
Do you not share your brother's shame?
Said the voice through Malkador's flesh as the sigillite's golden eyes turned on the Primarch of the Raven Guard.
My apologies, father, said Korax, dropping to one knee beside Dorn.
Malkador's form leaned forwards and rested his palm atop Korax's head.
Heed my wisdom.
Light and warmth pierced Korax's thoughts, blinding him to all else. For a moment, Korax glimpsed a vast chamber. The hall was filled with machinery. Coiling pipes and cables snaked across the floor and walls from banks of equipment set with thousands of dials and gauges. The air was thick with ozone, the rattle and hum of generators making the floor throb underfoot. Transformers crackled with energy, and pistons thudded in the distant shadows. In the glimmer of light and dark, Korax could see hundreds of robed figures attending to the machinery. Beneath red cowls, he spied half-machine faces, and from scarlet sleeves protruded limbs of metal and wire. Korax took all of this in at a glance, his eye being drawn to the strange but magnificent edifice at the center of the hall. It was a gigantic, towering dais, stretching away to the far wall, sheathed in gold that reflected the thousands of surrounding lights and inlaid with silvery circuitry. Dozens of cables and pipelines connected the dais to the accompanying machines, and electricity thrummed across its surface. A huge pair of doors were set into the base of the plinth, large enough to allow a tank or even one of the Mechanicum's scout titans to pass through. Yet it was not this that fixed the Primarch's gaze. The upper part of the building was fashioned in the form of an immense chair, ringed about by sparking conduits and pulsing energy fields. Seated in the chair was the Emperor, garbed in golden armor, his head bowed, with eyes tightly shut in fierce concentration. Waves of purple and blue energy flowed across his skin, a miniature lightning storm playing about his furrowed brow. As Korax watched, a single bead of glittering sweat broke from the Emperor's brow and fell like a golden droplet from his cheek. The Emperor's jaw was clenched, either from effort or pain. The Primarch had never seen his father look as he did now, and he felt a moment of worry. The scene faded, replaced by a landscape suffused with light. It seemed to exist nowhere, formed of the light and nothing more. At the heart of the glare, the Emperor was sitting as he was before, though now he was upon a golden throne that blazed with energy. A giant eagle sat atop its back, two-headed, glaring at Korax with ruby eyes. The Emperor's face was calm here, showing no evidence of the strain the Primarch had glimpsed before. The Master of Mankind seemed to be in deep meditation, unmoving on his seat of gold.
"Father, my Emperor, it is Corvus," he said, lowering himself to one knee. "If you can hear me, please heed my words. My legion is all but dead, and our enemies grow stronger with each passing day. I would know what you would wish me to do. It is in my heart to strike back at these traitors, to shed their blood as they have shed mine. All I ask is your blessing on this endeavor, and I shall take the battle to the foe with righteousness in my heart and your glory in my mind."
There was no change in the Emperor's demeanor.
"Father, hear me!"
In his straining, Korax felt his wounds reopening under his armor, thick blood trickling down his side. He ignored the surge of pain.
"The Raven Guard will fight to the last to protect the Imperial truth. We are not so strong as once we were, but we will lay down each life left to us in your defense. But I need your help. Please give me your wisdom. Grant me your guidance."
He broke down, collapsing as a wave of fatigue washed through him. For more than 300 days he had fought back the injuries of Istvan, pushing himself on. At first his legion had needed him. Later he had held on for this moment, enduring his agony in silence so that he might come before the Emperor and seek his lord's command. He had failed. He had failed on Istvan, and he had failed here. Blood was leaking from his many wounds, as if in response to the hurt he felt in his psyche. With it his vigor died, and his will faded.
"Son!"
That one word resounded across the glowing firmament, echoing and rebounding, filling Korax's thoughts even as the sound came to his ear. The Emperor's eyes were open, glittering orbs of gold that bored into Korax's soul. Motes of golden energy danced in those orbs, but their look was not without kindness. The Emperor stood, his armor melting away into wisps of golden threads to be replaced by robes of flowing silver that cascaded from his body like an argent waterfall. The Emperor stood, seeming diminished in size but not presence by the removal of his armor. Particles churned as smoke, forming insubstantial steps that allowed the Emperor to descend as effortlessly as a normal man walks down a flight of stairs. The Emperor reached out a hand, and Korax felt hot fingers upon his brow. Energy flowed through the Primarch, knitting his shattered bones, stemming his pouring blood, healing wounded muscles and organs. The Primarch gasped, filled with love and adoration.
"Stand!"
Korax did as the Emperor commanded, his strength restored.
"I am sorry, Father,"
said Korax, dropping to his knees once more.
"I know that your labors are important, but I have to speak with you." "Of course you do, Corvus," said the Emperor.
The majesty and power had gone from his voice, leaving only a tone of respect and admiration.
"You have endured much to come here."
Korax felt a hand on his arm, and he straightened under the Emperor's guidance. His father appeared less majestic, the light dimming beneath his skin, his face taking on the features of a normal man with brown eyes, while long, dark hair flowed from his scalp.
"Is this your true face?"
asked Korax.
"I have no such thing," replied the Emperor. "I have worn a million faces over the millennia, according to need or whim." "I remember this one," said Korax, dimly recalling a dream he had glimpsed when overcome by his wounds in the crashing Thunderhawk. "This was how you appeared to me when I was born within my pod." "Yes, it is strange that you should remember that," said the Emperor.
His expression became sterner.
"What do you wish to ask of me, my son?"
"The Raven Guard verge on being a spent force, but I would rebuild them if I had the chance,"
said Korax. Yet I cannot spare a warrior from the fighting to come, nor the time to raise up a new generation of the Legion. I seek your permission to launch attacks against the traitors, to mark our final passing in the glory of battle.
You wish to sacrifice your Legion?
The Emperor seemed genuinely surprised.
In what cause?
I do not do it out of woe, but necessity, explained Korax. I must atone for the failure at Istvan, for it will tear me apart as surely as my wounds did, if allowed to fester in my heart. Forgive me, but I cannot defend Terra, idly awaiting my fate to come to me. The Emperor did not reply for some time, his brow creased slightly with deep thought. Korax waited patiently, eyes fixed to the Emperor's face.
I concur, the Master of Mankind said eventually. It is in your nature to cry havoc and wreak the same upon your foes. Yet there is no need for sacrifice. I am reluctant. But you have my trust, Corvus. I will grant you a gift, a very precious gift.
Once more the Emperor reached out his hand and laid it upon Korax's head. For an eternity, Korax was overwhelmed by the mind of the Emperor. An existence that had spanned more than 30 millennia tried to crowd into the Primarch's thoughts, sending pain searing through him. In a moment, the pain had ceased. The imprint upon his memories a shard of what had come before, the tiniest fraction of the Emperor's being. Still reeling from the psychic onslaught, Korax wondered if this was how the astrotelepaths felt during the soul binding, their minds conjoined with the psychic might of the Emperor. Flashes of new memories coursed through his thoughts, blocking out all other sensation. A succession of images burned into his psyche. The Primarch's body quaked with the sensation, rebelling against the patterns and images thrust into his brain. He could smell the tang of cleansing fluids and hear the buzz of machines and the hiss of respiration devices. Korax glimpsed metal cylinders with glass viewplates, arranged in a circle at the heart of a clinically sterile chamber, a maze of wires and pumps and tubes splaying from each steel sarcophagus. The Primarch did not just see the scene. He was part of it, speaking to a white-coated technician in a language he did not understand. There were other orderlies with cloth face masks and tight hoods drawn over their heads, their hands gloved in white. Korax walked amongst the incubators, noting at a glance the digital displays plugged into each, satisfied with the life signs beeping and chiming from each device. He felt enormous satisfaction. There was still much to do. The physical bodies were being nourished, their superhuman forms each developing over the genetic matrix inlaid inside each chamber. They were only empty shells, though, and the greatest part of the project was yet to come. Their nascent brains were ripe for the template integration. Even as he had these thoughts, Korax did not understand them. More arcane and technical phrases came to him, their meaning lost in the translation to his mind. Yet for all their complexity, the Primarch felt on the verge of recognition. Like his brothers, Korax's intellect was as enhanced as his body, and his brain was a vast repository of knowledge, both military and technical. There was something new in there as well, placed at the same time as the memories. In his mind's eye, he saw genetic splicing and hybridization calculations, and understood now that the Mendelian eukaryotic genesis formula was the first ever successfully cloned human gene code. He understood the mechanics behind his own creation and marveled at the ingenuity of the mind that had conceived of them. There were areas that were left blank, though, intentionally, he assumed, details of the parts of the Emperor's own genetic strand that were employed in the creation of the Primarchs. Obviously, the Emperor did not trust Korax that much. There were other memories, too. The dismantling of the laboratory after the strange warp phenomena that had swept away the incubators and scattered them across the galaxy. Korax saw it being reassembled in another place, far from prying eyes. He knew where that place was. Korax realized his eyes were closed and opened them. The Emperor was watching him, waiting patiently for his son to explore the gift he had given him.
"You have given me the secrets of the Primarch Project," said Korax, his voice a whisper of amazement. "The parts that were relevant to the creation of the legions, yes," said the Emperor.
He did not smile.
"I must return to the Webway. My absence will be sorely missed. This is all the help I can offer you."
"The Webway?"
"A portal into the warp of sorts," said the Emperor. "This is my great endeavor. Beyond the veil of reality, the forces of the Imperium wage war with a foe just as deadly as the legions of Horus. Demons."
Korax knew the word, but did not understand why the Emperor had used it.
"Demons," said Korax. "Insubstantial creatures of nightmare. I thought they were a fiction."
"No, in truth they do exist," said the Emperor. "The warp, the other realm we use to travel, is their home, their world. Horus's treachery is greater than you imagine. He has aligned himself to the powers of the warp, the so-called gods of chaos. The demons are now his allies, and they seek to breach the Imperial Palace from within. My warriors fight to hold back the incursion, lest Terra be overrun with a tide of chaos."
"I still do not understand," admitted Korax.
"You do not have to," said the Emperor. "Know only that my time is scarce, and my power bent towards securing our ultimate victory over these immaterial foes. It is to you and your brothers, who have remained true to their oaths, that the physical defense of the Imperium must fall. I have shown you the way by which the Raven Guard might rise from the ashes of their destruction and again fight for mankind."
"It is an incredible gift," said Korax. "But even with this, I am not sure what you intend for me to do."
"I have already informed Malkador of my intent, and he gathers such aids and companions as you will need to recover the gene tech," said the Emperor. "You asked me for help, but now you must help yourself. Rebuild the Raven Guard, strike down the traitors, and let them know that my will shall still be done."
"Yes, I shall," said Korax,
bowing his head and lowering to one knee.
"The Raven Guard will rise from the grave of defeat and bring you victory."
"I not only give you the gift of these memories and this technology, I place upon you the burden of its protection. You will have the power to create armies, as I once did, and that in itself would be reason enough to jealously guard its existence. More than that, the gene store contains the means to destroy what it created.
That which I bound within the fiber of every space marine can be undone, unraveling their strength and purpose at a stroke."
"I understand," said Korax. "I will defend it with my life."
"No, you must swear more than that, Corvus," said the Emperor,
his voice becoming aggressive, his words sending a surge of energy through Korax.
"Swear to me that should our enemies learn of its existence, you will destroy it and everything created by it. It is too dangerous to keep if there is even the possibility that Horus might take it. With its power, he could unleash devastation even greater than you can imagine, and raise up such a force that no defense Rogel might build could withstand it. Swear that oath to me."
"I swear as your son and servant," said Korax, trembling with the ferocity of the Emperor's demanding voice.
"Even if it means the destruction of the Raven Guard and all that you have striven to build,
The Emperor's words were like an implacable storm, pushing into Korax's mind, demanding obedience.
Even so.
The Emperor turned away and walked back towards the Golden Throne. The light consumed him once more, burning through his flesh, his robes forming the hard edges of armor. He stopped just before the throne and looked back at Korax.
One other thing, my son, he said calmly and slowly. The gene tech is protected. Only I can deactivate the defenses in person, but I cannot spare the time away from this place to do so. I'm sure, with the knowledge I have given to you, that you will find a way through.
Korax said nothing, as an aura of golden light surrounded the Emperor, lifting him up to the seat of the Golden Throne. The Master of Mankind grew in stature once more, as armored plates slid into place, and his form was again encased in the golden aegis that Korax had seen on many battlefields. The Emperor closed his eyes, and with a pulse of energy that rocked the whole chamber, sparks flew and psychic energy danced, embroiling the seated figure in a storm of power. Korax came to his senses, lying on a marbled floor, with Dorn and Malkador bent over him, still not sure he believed what had passed. The memories were there, embedded in his brain, like a vault of treasures to be unlocked, and he clung to them as proof of the Emperor's will.
Thank you, Father, Korax said.
He looked up at Malkador, who nodded in understanding.
You have been set a difficult task, Korax, said the Sigillite. We should begin your preparations.
Steam and other vapors filled the sublevel chamber with distorting clouds and whirls of gas. The thump of heavy machinery made the whole basement shudder every few seconds, setting the cable bundles on the wall rattling and sending the glow globes circling in eccentric orbits about their hanging wires. It was certainly not the most pleasant location for a lair, and by far one of the noisiest Omegon had ever inhabited, but it served its purpose well. Situated below the forges of the well-metalled district of Kievar's largest city, Nabrik, the four adjoining rooms occupied by the Primarch of the Alpha Legion were at the heart of the old industrial complex from which the technocrats had ruled the world before the coming of the Emperor. These days, the furnace rooms and manufactories bore the symbol of the Mechanicum of Mars, but for thousands of years before their coming, Kievar had been a powerhouse of weapons manufacture and shipbuilding. The old tech guilds had divided their planet's resources between them and each taken to themselves rulership of Kievar, trading very successfully with the few neighboring systems that had been within reach during Old Night. It had been a blow to the prestige of the tech guild when Korax had led the rebellion of the mining colony of Lycaeus, Kievar's largest moon. Further insult had been added to this gratuitous injury when the Emperor had arrived and the tech guilds had been sworn in as members of the Imperium. Had they known then that the Martians would dismantle their monopoly and reorder their society, the tech guilds might have resisted further. Omegon was pleased that they had not fought to the last. Enough of them remained alive, kept from death over the decades by inhuman augmentations and anti-aging narcotics, many of them now illegal under the regime of the Mechanicum, that he had a ready core of resentment from which to recruit. He had been here for less than 100 days, and already he had established contact with three of the surviving Tech Guild overseers. Progress had been swift, their agreement to cooperate in the liberation of Kievar quickly accomplished. With the network of the Alpha Legion spreading across the Forge world, both in terms of Omegon's own operatives and the agents of the Tech Guilds, he was confident that the remaining five houses of the old rulers, those who had some surviving scion hidden away amongst the smoke and flames of the irradiated wastelands, would soon add their support. Omegon had little interest in the freeing of Kievar from the Emperor's clutches, except in so much as it would inconvenience his enemies and prove to be the downfall of Korax. Though the Kievarans measured themselves amongst the highest in terms of technical accomplishment, they were in truth of only average ability and output in comparison to many of the Mechanicum's forge worlds. The Primarch was ever quick to further inflate the bloated self-esteem of the Tech Guilders, though, and with promises and veiled assertions, he had led them to believe that once they had thrown off the yoke of imperial tyranny, he had used that phrase so often of late, the Kievarans would be the equal of Mars. Sitting beneath a scalding hot pipe, nestled between a reactor feed core and a colossal drive shaft, Omegon opened up a tripod on the bare floor in front of him and set upon it a small communications device about the size of his fist. He keyed in a sequence of frequency ciphers from memory. Cracking the security protocols of the Mechanicum's on-world communications network had taken him 5 whole days of calculations, and began to set up the signal. He routed the transmission through 15 different substations, bounced the carrier wave from 2 orbiting stations, established 3 dead-end backtrace locations, including one on Deliverance for his own amusement, and finally entered his personal command code check. As Omegon worked, he felt a measure of contentment. While he had no preference regarding the existence or extinction of Korax and his legion in themselves, their removal and the securing of the Terran tech which the Cabal had assured him they would come in possession of would be a step closer towards achieving the aim of the twin Primarchs. If Horus were to be given the greatest chance of success, the Emperor had to be isolated. In their death, the Raven Guard would provide further means for that to be accomplished. Satisfied that only the most diligent search would indicate he was hijacking the constant data stream that crisscrossed the Mechanicum's new estate, Omegon finally punched in the frequency address of Iardeen Nethri, his contact within the White Iron Guild. The communicator crackled for a while, and then an affirmative beep told the Primarch that the connection had been established. His eyes went to the small schematic readout on the front of the communicator, assuring himself that the transmission was free from monitoring. He pressed the acceptance key.
Counselor Efrit, I was expecting contact earlier.
Nethri's voice was muffled from the many layers of compression and encryption through which the transmission was being squeezed.
I hope that nothing is amiss.
All is well, replied Omegon. His voice, as it would emerge at the other end of the line, would be nothing like his own, modulated and warped several times over to eradicate any trace of his identity.
I had to confirm certain orders and agreements.
Omegon had not had to do any such thing, but was masquerading as an intermediary rather than the orchestrator of this particular coup in waiting.
We are ready to make our report to the Revolutionary Council, said Nethri.
Go ahead, said Omegon, smiling.
He had created 3 different cells, one for each of the guilds already sworn to his cause, and while he waited, intelligence from the Alpha Legionaries, hidden in the Raven Guard, had sent them on all manner of inconsequential missions and information-gathering expeditions. It was good to keep them occupied and distracted, and also necessary to test their competence and security procedures. So far, his operatives had done well, and the Kievaran authorities had no reason to suspect anything was wrong with their world.
The storage bays at Pharsalica have been emptied of their usual Promethean consignments. We are investigating to what purpose. Cauldron Diaminex has been promoted to vice-regent of the Org Medical Society. He was one of the most vocal political opponents of the Imperium before compliance.
Omegon continued to listen as more pointless trivia was rambled out to him by Nethri, until one particular piece of information piqued his curiosity.
Please, repeat that last section, he said.
Output from Manufactorum 38 has been rerouted to Manufactorum 26, Counselor,
Nethri said again.
Confirmed, said Omegon.
Manufactorum 38 had been employed since the coming of the Raven Guard in the construction of power armor energy conduits. That the factory had ceased production was intriguing and ran counter to Omegon's expectation. He would have thought that all elements of armor production would have increased since the massacre, but the opposite was proving true. For the last 18 days, production was being scaled down.
Any reason given as to why this has happened? He asked.
We are not sure, Counselor. There has been an increase in astrotelepathic traffic through the Cortex Spire, and I have heard gossip that a new armor design is being awaited.
Understood, said Omegon.
He checked the passive interference monitor again. There was still no sign the transmission had been detected. The Primarch could not bring himself to listen to the rest of the agent's interminable report, and so asked for the only piece of information he considered pertinent.
What news of the Raven Guard? Is there any sign of Korax?
There is no news concerning the usurper, Counselor, replied Nethri. Current reports show only those ships and personnel previously communicated to you. We have not heard of anything that would suggest when or if he intends or is able to return.
Very well. Please submit the rest of your report by standard data packet. Ending transmission. He cut the link and set about dismantling the maze of communications, loops and checks he had erected. While he did this, he used his Legion transmitter to contact Verson. The operative answered within moments.
We need an operative inside Manufactorum 38, he said.
Understood, replied Verson. I'll have someone in place by moonfall. There was no need to say anything further, and the communicator buzzed and fell silent. Having completed his shutdown, Omegon dismantled the communicator and stowed it in a hip sack that he slung onto his belt as he stood. He wore the red robes of a Mechanicum acolyte and put on a silver and pearl mask to conceal his face before pulling up the gold-trimmed hood. Amongst a populace that contained vat-grown slaves, half-machine servitors, and the augmetically enhanced, Omegon's size would not be worthy of remark. Even so, when forced to move openly, he travelled only during the tween-shift hours and through the areas of least traffic. It was better to be certain than sorry. It was time to quit his uncomfortable environs and move on to the next safe area. 2 days was long enough to be staying in one place. He already had his next location in mind.